I was in a pretty bad place mentally going through infertility for 3 years. It was really hard. So many people in my life were having kids, they were growing their family, and we were on a trip to Disney World with our son, and I just could not enjoy this trip because I was looking around and it's just all these families with all of these kids. And of course, I was so grateful to be there with my son, but I would just this dream of wanting to have a double stroller and this dream of wanting to have my bigger family with me at Disney World. And so I looked at my husband one day on the trip and I said, "We have to do IVF. I can't walk around and see all these families. We have to do this."
This podcast is meant to provide information on reproductive health. It does not establish a physician-patient relationship, and we would urge you to contact your treating provider regarding your care.
Hi, it's Dorette Nurhassan, and we are back at the Modern Parenthood podcast. And today, I'm delighted to have Kayla Varney. You know her very well on Instagram as an influencer at Consciously Kay. She's here today to share her story of her fertility journeys, and I'm so incredibly excited for her to tell you her story. Welcome to the show, Kayla.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat.
Wonderful. Well, let's start off with, how did you meet your partner? What led you to this process?
So I met my husband when I was 18. We worked in a restaurant together and we're just kind of inseparable ever since. We've been together almost 12 years, which is crazy. And so I have a six-year-old son who I was lucky enough to have to conceive naturally. And then we have an 11-month-old, almost 11-month-old daughter who we had through IVF.
Wonderful. Tell us a little bit about, so you had your son naturally, and then what were your struggles like thinking, oh, it should be easy for me to have a second child? Tell us a little bit about what went into that process.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting. It wasn't easy for us to conceive our son either. So that took about 13 months. And we had actually started the fertility journey with him too. We went to see a doctor, said, you know, it's been a year and it hasn't worked out. And we made the plan to start a medication and thought, you know what, let's go on a vacation before we get into this. Like, let's just relax and then we'll start this kind of stressful journey. Went on a trip to Hawaii. Came back and found out I was pregnant. And so going into when he was about a year and a half old, we decided we wanted to have another one. And kind of in my head, I was like, there's no way it's going to be hard twice. Like it just, we just have to not stress about it and it'll be fine. And of course it wasn't. And it took about 3 years of struggling. So after about a year with trying for our second as well, we started going to the doctor. We did all the testing, medicated cycles, all of those things, which weren't successful. So we thought, let's go on a trip to Hawaii. That worked last time. So we went on another trip to Hawaii. And unfortunately, that it was not our secret trick for the second one. And so it was just a lot of back and forth. We didn't have any insurance coverage personally because I'm self-employed. And so we had to navigate the financial part of it as well. We weren't able to kind of do as much as we wanted right away because we couldn't afford it. And so we did as much as insurance would cover. We did medicated cycles. They couldn't find anything in our testing that could lead us to an answer. So it was a lot of guessing, let's try this, and it didn't work. And after, you know, about 3 years, and we had gotten to a financial place where we could afford to do more invasive. We tried IUI, all of our IUIs failed. And finally, we have to do IVF. This is our last chance. Like I'm almost 30. I was feeling kind of the time pressure of that as well. And so we did IVF and that was a tricky thing in itself. It took quite a few months of getting things regulated, getting things to actually work the way they're supposed to. But we were lucky enough on our first transfer to have that work, and now we have a daughter who's going to turn one next month, and yeah, it's a journey.
For our listeners, I just want to remind you, IUI, intrauterine insemination, that's where we get the sperm and we put it directly into the uterus. It's a simple speculum exam in the clinic, very similar to a pap smear. IVF, in vitro fertilization, that's where we create the embryos outside the body. So in the lab, we combine the eggs and sperm to create the embryos and then subsequently perform an embryo transfer. You mentioned so many important aspects. The first one is what we call secondary infertility, meaning, and I know it took about a year plus to have your first one, but many times I see patients, they come in and they have a baby naturally the first time, and it's a struggle because just like you said, well, maybe we just go back to Hawaii and we'll get pregnant. And it's a struggle when what you thought worked for the first one does not work the second time. And the anxiety, the stress, the depression that we see in patients with secondary infertility, meaning they already have one living child at home, is still the same as someone who does not have any children. You're still struggling through a lot of the same things. And I'm so grateful that you were active and you went and you seek treatment as soon as you said, oh, we hit the year mark, let's go back to the doctor and see what happens. And so that's really good. Tell us a little bit about some of what went into the process when you heard you had unexplained infertility, meaning you did all the testing and everything looks good. How, from a patient's perspective, tell us how you feel when you hear the word unexplained infertility.
Oh, it's incredibly frustrating. And I'm sure everybody has a different experience, but I changed doctors throughout my experience because a lot of times I've found with unexplained infertility, there's like a strange hope that the doctors try to give you. And so I had situations where the nurses were like, by Christmas, like you'll be fine. You'll be pregnant. We can't find anything wrong. There's no reason you can't be pregnant. And that can be really, it's infuriating because you're like, I just want to fix it. And so then when the doctors are telling you it's unexplained, I took matters into my own hands and I really was like, there must be something wrong with me. Like there's something that I can do that can fix this. I'm a researcher. I'm a fixer. I just like want to do things myself. And so when things are unexplained, I'm a very practical person. I'm like, there has to be an explanation for this. There has to be something. And so it made me take on a sense of like, there's something I am doing wrong that I must be able to fix this. And so I went my diet, my supplementation, I did acupuncture. I did all of these things thinking if there's not a reason, then it's something I'm doing. I must be able to fix this. And of course that wasn't the case, but when you're so desperate and sad and you want it so bad and the professionals can't give you an answer, it's incredibly frustrating.
Exactly what you said. This is what I hear from patients with unexplained infertility. We do all the testing and everything looks good, but you want an answer. You want to know, why is this not working? There must be an answer. And, you know, I want our listeners to know out there, 20% of patients that go into fertility clinics have the diagnosis unexplained infertility, meaning all the testing looks good, but still, we don't know why you're not getting pregnant. And just like in Kayla's case, we'll eventually go on to have a successful pregnancy with treatments. But it's incredibly frustrating when you hear that because you want an answer. You want to say, okay, this is what's wrong. We're going to fix it. And then we're going to get pregnant. And when this lack of control of what's happening to your body and you, there's nothing really that you can do to fix it, it becomes very difficult. So thank you so much for sharing how you felt about unexplained infertility.
Yeah. It's everybody that I know personally that's struggled with infertility has been unexplained. And so it's a hard thing to go through no matter what, but not having answers is especially hard.
And then you also mentioned something very important that you did. You changed your lifestyle, changed your diet, did acupuncture. Tell us a little bit about that, because I believe very much in a holistic approach as well. There is the medicine aspect, the things that I can do in the office with drugs, IVF. But I also tell patients, the embryo we create is only as good as the eggs and sperm you're going to give to us. And so the healthier you both are, the healthier the eggs and sperm you're going to give to us. So tell us about that health journey that you took on in that process.
Yeah. So I will say that I was a particularly healthy person at the time. And that made it extra frustrating to me because I felt like I had been so perfect and I'd done all these things right for so long that it wasn't like I needed to make a drastic change. But at the time I had been vegan for, I'm trying to think, maybe 10 years at this point. And so I thought, even though I felt healthy, I thought maybe that's it. Maybe that's the issue. And so I decided to add animal products back into my diet. And I was eating full fat dairy and meat and all of the things that the internet told me to eat. And my husband as well, he lost 10 pounds. He was eating walnuts and hemp seeds and all of the right foods that, again, that Google tells you to eat. And we were taking COQ10, and we were doing, you know, all of the possible things that we thought could help. And, you know, we still needed IVF in the end. And it's hard to say whether or not all of those things played a role in us getting great embryos and a successful first transfer. It's possible. But it can be hard to feel like it's all on you, like you're doing something wrong. And if you just take this one supplement or you just do this one thing, especially in the influencer world and the social media world where there's so many people saying, you just have to do this. You just have to eat eggs for breakfast. You just need this vitamin. You just need this. And it really makes you think, I'm doing it wrong. And so I did make all those changes and I didn't necessarily feel better or worse, but I felt like I was doing something. And I certainly agree that I'm a big believer in holistic health and that it's certainly not going to hurt anybody to change their lifestyle and focus on whole foods and hydration and exercise and doing all of those things. I just wish it ended up being a perfect answer for me, but it wasn't.
Yeah. And I saw that on your Instagram page, you are a big activist for balanced living. So tell us a little bit about that.
I think a lot of that came from my infertility struggle because before that, I'm definitely a perfectionist. And so for a long time, I struggled with doing everything I could to be non-toxic, to not bring fragrance into my home, to eat nothing processed, avoided certain oils, did all of those things. And I realized through infertility, you know, you can be perfect and still deal with those struggles. And it really allowed me to release a little bit of that stress and that perfectionism and see that it was causing a lot of stress for me to try to be perfect all the time. And that wasn't helpful either. And so I've really been able to find balance in enjoying my life and focusing on my health, focusing on feeling good, but not feeling like I need to be perfect and do everything right all the time, because you can do everything right all the time and still have infertility, for example.
You brought up two very good important points. You said it's all these many things that you did, and you don't know if it's what you did or if it's the IVF. And I think it's both. I think the healthier you are and all those things that you did, you gave good eggs and good sperm to create good embryos. And then also having a good doctor, a good lab, those things are also influential in terms of getting a healthy embryo for transfer. So I think it's the addition of like 1,000 things and having all those stars align up and then, you know, leading to success. So that's a very, very good point. And you also brought up a good point. You're doing everything possible. So that my second point is someone like you who's doing everything possible, balanced living, healthy lifestyle, but still needed IVF to get pregnant. And that's really important because sometimes I see people beat themselves up all the time. They're like, oh my God, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and it's still not working. And this is where medicine and science is very helpful and in terms of helping us get to that success. So two very good points in your story.
Yeah, I think that it's, you know, it's all about balance, really. That's coming from a place of trying to be perfect, it's really led me to a much healthier place now.
Tell us a little bit about your IVF journey. What was that like?
Yeah, so I love telling my story about why I decided to do IVF, because it was kind of a topic of conversation with my husband back and forth of, do we want to do this? Because I was in a pretty bad place mentally going through infertility for 3 years. It was really hard. So many people in my life were having kids, they were growing their family. And we were on a trip to Disney World with our son. And I just could not enjoy this trip because I was looking around and it's just all these families with all of these kids. And of course, I was so grateful to be there with my son. But I would just, this dream of wanting to have a double stroller and this dream of wanting to have my bigger family with me at Disney World. And so I looked at my husband one day on the trip and I said, we have to do IVF. I can't walk around and see all these families. We have to do this. We called our doctor from Florida, from Disney World. And I said, like, I'm ready. I'm going to start IVF. And we drove home the next day. I went to the doctor for my blood draw the next day. And it was a process getting my schedule, my cycle and everything to work out to start medication. But we got our medication right away. We were so ready to go. And of course, you know, my estrogen is wrong. My progesterone is wrong. My this and my that. And so I think it took us, we started the process in May and we didn't actually have our transfer until the very end of September. We thought it was going to like go, 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 and we'll be good. And even then, you know, things pop up, nothing's ever perfect. And so that was even the IVF process of just getting the eggs and doing the transfer was months long and hard, but I felt like we were finally doing something. Like this was our last hope, IVF. If IVF doesn't work, what are we going to do? And so at least I had hope at this point. I was like, okay, we're finally doing something that has a really high success rate that we can make this happen. And once we finally did, we did the egg retrieval. We had a great number of eggs, great egg quality. We ended up with 5 healthy embryos, which was great. And we did have to push our transfer back twice because of lining issues and estrogen issues. But in the end, I feel like it all happened exactly the way it was supposed to. Like our daughter just, her being here now, I can confidently say that every little thing that went wrong was for a purpose, was to bring her here when she was brought here.
That's so well said. And I've heard that from other patients as well. They say, this was the child I was meant to have at this time. And, you know, just the timing wasn't right. And then it happens. And this was the child you were meant to have. But you did bring up several things that I want our listeners to hear. And IVF, the first is IVF is a process. It's not you go in and you do a couple injections, retrieval, transfer, and you're pregnant in a few days. It's a long process. Many times, I'd say 95, 99% of patients, when we think you're going to start the IVF process, you do. But just like you said, sometimes your estrogen level is too high or you have a cyst and we have to wait to re-baseline you or restart. And that could be frustrating because you thought you were going to start and it wasn't the optimal time. Like your body was not ready to start the injections. So that's important for our listeners to hear. The other thing is you go through the injections, you do the egg retrieval. And just like you said, you have to wait for the embryos to grow out and then freeze them. And did you do the pre-implantation genetic testing aneuploidy screening where they test for like Down syndrome, Turner syndrome, trisomy 16? Yeah. And that's very helpful because it allows your physician, the embryologist, to pick a better embryo for transfer and therefore increasing your success versus just transferring an embryo without knowing the aneuploid status of that embryo. So that's really good that you did the PGTA testing. But then you also brought up another point. You do the egg retrieval. You have to grow the embryos in the incubator for 5 to 7 days. They have to biopsy them and freeze them. Then it takes another month or so to get the results back. And then only then we can start your uterus to get ready. And then it sounds like you had some hurdles there too in terms of thin lining or estrogen levels were not right. And kind of restarting that process, the frozen embryo transfer process where you would have to reprep the uterus. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was meant to transfer on my birthday. So that was the initial, it just kind of worked out that way. And so I had that in my head. And then when I went in for my appointment and found out that my lining wasn't quite ready, I was devastated because in my head, I was like, this lined up perfectly. This was meant to be, it's my birthday. And now looking back on it, I'm obviously so grateful to doctors that we didn't push anything or try to make something happen that wasn't going to work, because you go through all of this to get these eggs, to make these embryos, and you don't want to just throw them away because you're impatient. And I only had to wait 3 days after that. So it was okay. But it was, any little hurdle is so hard because it's different for everybody. For me, it had been 3 years, and probably more than 3 years at that point. And every day that got pushed back, it was like a stab in the heart of, I can't wait anymore. I need this right now. But then in the end, it ended up working out. For example, in my case, I ended up ovulating in my transfer cycle, which they weren't expecting from me. And so that changed my path a little bit because I ended up doing a trigger shot, and along with my transfer, and then I ended up not having to do progesterone shots, which was a bright side for me. I ended up getting to do suppositories instead, which was much more comfortable for me. And so there's little things that in the moment I was very frustrated by, but in the end it worked out. And I feel like, you know, in the end, it really comes back to, I can say this now that I have my daughter, that everything really was meant to be. Everything was meant to happen the way that it did, and even though it was frustrating.
You also mentioned something really important, that those 3 days, just waiting another 3 days, just felt incredibly frustrating. And I, too, have undergone fertility treatments. And it's a very different side when you're the patient and this should have happened yesterday and you should have been a mom yesterday or have a second baby yesterday. But it's really nice to have that objective person as the physician that says, no, this is not the right moment. We need to wait. I'm glad your doctors waited 3 more days because they wanted to find that right moment. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. And having the right doctor too, that, you know, hugs you when you cry and says, you know, I know that this is what you wanted, but I promise you, like, it's going to be worth it in the end. And it was. And so I think that that's so important too, is having those people in your corner that you can like look back on and think that it really made the experience better and easier.
I think that's brilliant. Having that village, your team at the office, the fertility clinic, your doctor, the staff there, and then at home, your family, friends, that village, you really do need that village to lean on, especially when you're going through something as difficult as fertility treatments.
Absolutely. And even my son was part of it. You know, there's a guilt that I think comes along with secondary infertility. One, because you have a child or, you know, multiple children already. And so you can feel a little bit guilty or selfish that you want more, and that, you know, there's people out there that don't have any kids and you should feel lucky to have one. And there's that guilt that comes along with it, as well as the guilt of having, you know, my son in particular was always asking for a sibling. Like, when am I going to get, and he wanted a sister. That was like, he's like, when am I going to get a baby sister? It was never a question that he was going to get a brother. And so we made him a part of our experience. He was there, you know, we made sure he understood what a needle was and all of those things, but he wanted to be there for the shots. So he was there and he did, you know, held my hand with his little hand when we did all of the shots for the egg retrieval. He was so happy to be a part of it. And, you know, you're doing a great job, mama. And he must have been, he was four at the time, I guess. And even just having him there in my little corner of like, you can do this, mama, we're going to get another baby. Like, it's so special and such a unique experience.
Yeah. And it's amazing. He's proud of you for going through this so he can have his little sister. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. He's so great. But I wanted to give him a sibling so bad. And, you know, he knew we were going to the doctors all the time. So he'd come with us to the doctors when he could. And like, when are you going to get that baby in your belly, mama? When's that going to be? And so finally getting pregnant and getting to tell him, like, there's a baby in there. Like, and what getting to watch it grow and experience that with him was so surreal. Such a cool experience to you know, hopefully have him remember bits and pieces of that moving on into his life, and for him to have wanted his sister for so long and now have her here, and he's absolutely smitten by her. So it's, I feel very lucky to be able to come on here and share a success story and feel so happy, because I know there's so many people that are still waiting for their success story, and I hope that this can give them hope that it will happen.
Tell us, what was it like for your son when he went to the hospital and he saw his sister, and then bringing his sister home, and what it's like having him as a big brother to her? Tell us what that dynamic is like.
Yeah, so I ended up having a C-section because my baby was breech. And so we opted to not have our son come to the hospital because I was having a really hard time recovering. And so he got to meet her at home, which I think was nice. We picked him up from school and brought him home, and she was in her little lounger. And I have it on video where he walks in and he's just kind of staring at her like, I've been thinking about this baby for a long time, but now that thing is just here. He adores her. He just... like, he's been sick the past couple of days, and so we've been telling him to keep his hands off her so she doesn't get sick. And he's like, he's dying. He's like, I just want to squeeze her. I just want to love her. Like, it's killing him that he can't snuggle her because he just loves her so much, which I was nervous about because they have a 5.5 year age gap. So he knew life as an only child for a really long time, and you would never know. He's so proud to be a big brother. He loves her so much. I think he just wants to steal her. He's obsessed with her. And so I feel very lucky because, you know, it can be hard for kids to know life just with mom and dad for so long. And she just fits in so seamlessly. And they both love each other so much.
That's amazing. I love this story. Tell us a little bit, do you have any regrets? Would you do anything differently if you had to go back and do it all over again?
No, there was a time where I wished that we didn't wait so long to do IVF in hindsight. But then when I think back on it, one, financially, we would have been scraping the bottom of the barrel to afford IVF at the time. I think when it came down to it, after medications and all of the treatments and acupuncture and everything, transparently, I think we spent $30,000 to have our daughter. And so if we had done it differently or sooner or pushed it, I think it would have put us in a more stressful financial situation. And I also think I feel really lucky for all the things we got to do with our son that we wouldn't have been able to do if we had two kids. He, you know, he's been to Disney World, I think, 3 or 4 times. He went to Disneyland. He went to Hawaii. He went to Jamaica. We really lived it up during that time because we knew, you know, once we have two kids, you know, financially, time-wise, all of these things, it's going to change. And so we were able to really give him a lot, and it was a lot of fun. It was a very sad, hard couple of years, but we made sure to make it fun for him. And so looking back on it, it was always meant to be her, and her birth month flower just turned out to be her name, and we didn't plan it that way. And there's all these little things that feel like little signs from the universe that if we had done it at any other time, nothing would be the way it is. I don't think I'd have the job that I have. I wouldn't be on this podcast because having all of the free time of only having one child, I was able to grow my social media, really put a lot of effort into content creation and growing that way, and, you know, fostering a really strong relationship with my husband. We've truly never been closer than we are now. And so I think in hindsight, looking back on it, all of the mental health struggles, now that I'm here where I'm at, were worth it because there really was so much good that came from truly the hardest time of my life, which is bizarre to say, but looking back on it, it all just feels right for me.
And it sounds like you grew from that experience and it made you the person who you are today.
Oh my gosh, that couldn't be more true. Yeah, I'm really proud of who I am today. And I was not the same person I am now, you know, even 4 or 5 years ago. And I think our struggles, our hardships shape us in a way that nothing else can. And I'm proud to have survived it and gone through it, and very lucky to have such a happy ending to my story right now. And that, of course, plays a role. My heart is with anybody that's still in the middle of that struggle, because there's really nothing like it, and you can't understand it unless you've gone through it yourself. And I just hope for everybody that they can come out of it stronger and happier, and realize that maybe in a way it made sense, even though the thing I hated most when I was going through it was everything happens for a reason. Anytime someone said that to me, I was like, don't say that to me. I hated it. It drove me crazy. But now looking back on it, I can say that for myself, that it really does feel like it all happened the way it was supposed to.
Oh, what an amazing story. Do you have any last words of advice, words of wisdom, hope for our listeners out there?
I think when your instinct is to push people away, because that was my instinct. I definitely closed myself off. I didn't talk to people very much about it. And I didn't talk to people much at all, honestly. I entered a pretty deep, dark place during it. And my advice is I'm not going to say try not to do that, because it's something you have no control over, but try to let people in and try to let people take care of you, and try to hold on to that village, because it's so sad and it's so hard, and you need your people. And yeah, I want to say hold on hope too. And I can say that as a success story. And also just let yourself be mad and sad too. It's not, you don't have to just, all of your feelings are valid. And it's one of the hardest things you can go through, to want a baby and not have a baby. And just let yourself be mad and sad sometimes. Just let yourself cry and yell, and then let your village pick you back up again.
And you brought up such a good point. I see it all the time in my fertility patients, and even myself who've done fertility treatments to have my only child. It's a fine line of like, how much do you share? Because if you share, hopefully you'll get more support from that village. But then sometimes you feel pressured, because then everyone wants to know exactly your minute by minute movements and steps, and okay, why did it not work this time? And you don't have the answers, and it's a fine line. But you're right, having that supportive environment is incredibly important for the journey. And sharing, it's really good to have you on this podcast, sharing your experience, because there are a lot of people out there that are struggling in silence, and they don't know that 1 in 6 couples in the United States today need fertility treatments to have a baby. And the more awareness that's out there, the more we share our stories and let others know, hey, it's normal. The person right next to you did IVF too to have their child. And then people feel like, okay, there's nothing wrong with me. Other people are going through the same thing, and so I should pursue treatment. So thank you so much for sharing your story.
Yeah, and that's also a great part of social media too. I'll just put it out there that I'm so happy when people reach out to me and say, you know, thanks for sharing your story, I'm also going through this. And then I'm always, message me. If you feel like you don't have anybody in your life that you can talk to about this, or that maybe you are talking to people, but they haven't been through it, so they don't understand it. There's truly nothing like having somebody that's gone through it. I'm lucky but I have a family member that also went through it. And so she was kind of my lifeline when I had questions, when I was sad, when I was like, didn't you just hate it when people said this? Like, don't you wish blah, blah, blah. And she got it because she went through it. And so I just want to put it out there that if you don't have anybody in your life like that and you're feeling alone, you can always message me. I love to talk to people about it, and I would love to support you. And finding a community online even can be really helpful if you don't have it in person. But everybody deserves to have people in their corner. And I hope that for everybody. So if you don't have that, I'm happy to be that. Find me and message me and we can chat.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. You can find Kayla on Instagram at ConsciouslyKay. And I'm delighted that you are here sharing your story. If you enjoyed hearing Kayla's story and want to hear other stories of hope and success, please like, follow, and subscribe Modern Parenthood Podcast.
Pioneer.